Thank you. On that point, I would like to compliment to both Director Salitro and Director Scott. We had, for a couple of years, Norwood Field completely unusable due to flooding, and thanks to Director Salitro, his expertise.
Mr. Rex, you got to talk into the mic more, if it's on.
Thank you. As to Norwood Field, it was completely unusable for any sports for a couple of years, and it was also posing a nuisance to neighbors due to flooding. Director Salitro, through thoroughly looking into the situation and trying a few different approaches, I feel like before Director Salitro stepped up, before he was promoted under the prior administration, we were getting a lot of runaround and not a lot of solutions. But very soon after Director Salitro became the director, he tried a couple of different methods to fix that problem, and it got fixed very quickly. I was also very pleased with the level of communication, his meeting with neighbors in the area, because it wasn't just about ruining that field, it was also a nuisance and property damage, in that this water was affecting the surrounding homeowners, flooding their basements. And beyond that, I wanted to also thank Director Scott, who also met with folks in the neighborhood there and took a look at that field and kept those promises when it came to going out there and making sure that we get Norwood Field, also known as previously dedicated as Rubery Field many years ago, so that we can get this productive for the neighborhood. And that's a small piece of the puzzle, but when you have a new ball field coming back online, that also opens up some other areas for that kind of development that the council president was discussing, where now we can do something with some of these other fields and potentially generate a great deal of revenue. I certainly think that Belmont Park, also in Ward 2, is ripe for that sort of use. And I know that the DPW came on down there, especially a couple of years ago, really fixed it up. It's beautiful. So with that, thank you.
Yes, Director.
Council President, I'd also add to what both you and Councilman Ricks were saying. If Warwick invests in turf fields long-term, the multi-purpose type that can, you know, ride with trends as far as different sports go, with the amount of hotels in Warwick, it actually gives you a competitive advantage for bringing in out-of-state tournaments and national competitions.
Yes, absolutely. And that was, I brought that to the attention of the previous administration. I can even remember clipping an article out of Airline Magazine and bringing it to their attention. And the airline at the time was called US Air, and it's no longer even in service. That's how long we've been talking about this. Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Director Scott, within the positions that are now within your scope, are there any grant writer positions?
Sorry?
Grant writer, so like, is there a grant writer position within these positions you have in your department?
Not yet, not this time.
Okay, so would that be a, is your plan to fill that position, that like have a full-time grant writer that can get all the federal and state grants, or is that a discussion that is going on?
Councilman, if I may?
Yes, please.
It's a great question, fantastic question. My department, the planning department, has long since written grants for open space and recreation. They flip-flop, DEM flip-flops in terms of their offerings to the state of Rhode Island. We've been incredibly successful, and if I could boast just a minute, Barton Farm, Chippewa Knox, Morris Farm, Tremendous amount of the Oakland Beach boat ramp, all through my hardworking department. We work closely. Mayor Solomon told us, you're on the same team, right? It doesn't stop by a department. So if Parks and Recreation needs something, my planning team's out there to write the grant. Matt's people, they'll build it. And he'll program. So the mayor has concentrated all the resources of the city to most effectively meet the objective. He gives us an objective, work as a team. We will be writing those grants as they come forward. I have two tonight. When we get to the city plan, you'll see that we have two exciting projects, both of which were written by grants from the department that usually have a recreational open space component. Thank you very much.
And also add to that that I've been meeting with planning on a weekly basis, sometimes bi-weekly, but we're constantly in contact about things that we do that overlap, as I've been meeting with DPW as well.
Thank you. That's even better. Thank you. I appreciate that. So now I have a better understanding of the operations going on. The second question is, on the Winslow Field, is that something that also falls under your scope?
Yes.
Okay, so are we responsible? Is the city and your department responsible?
I'm sorry, we have a long-term lease, and yes, the city is responsible for maintaining under the lease agreement the parking area, individually their permitted fields, and those that take out the permits are responsible for the care and responsibility and the stewardship of the permitted areas. But for common areas, like the access road and parking, the agreement we have with RIAC is that we will maintain that. Not a lot of maintenance goes into that. You do have to fill, regrade every once in a while the parking lot. But for the majority of the area, it will be the permittees that actually have to maintain stewardship in that particular agreement.
You answer my questions before I can ask them, as if we spoke about this before. And my last question is the lighting. I remember that was something we did speak about before. Has it been understood who's taking care of the lighting of Winslow Field?
The lighting at Winslow Field, under a lease agreement between the league and RIAC, the city, the league was responsible for paying for the lighting. That was when it first started. But as we know, leagues evolve. Children grow older. People that were committed then may not be involved with the league now. So when that torch is passed to someone else, sometimes all the data isn't conveyed to someone else. But currently, right now, the lights were the league's responsibility. And that hasn't changed since initiation. So that's why those lights, I guess there was an issue whether or not, why aren't they lit up? They weren't the city's responsibility to light up. Mm-hmm. They were the assumed responsibility of the teams or the leagues that took over the operation.
Okay, thank you very much, Mayor. And I would like to offer, if there's ever a time you want to review the lease or go over any of that, I'd be happy to join in and be a part of that. And I agree with what you said. As the transitions happen, that gets lost in the paperwork. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment one thing. If we were ever to develop the fields at Tollgate and put in turf fields up there, right now my daughter travels on travel soccer teams. All of the tournaments are in Massachusetts. There are no tournaments in Rhode Island. Occasionally, if there's a small tournament, maybe up in Smithfield, where they have one or two fields. You have a complex at Tollgate on 95 in the middle of all these train stations and airport with hotels, that I can guarantee you that you'll have those complexes rented, and you'll have them rented by leagues. You have lacrosse, you have soccer, you have all these other leagues, and you'll definitely bring in $300,000 to $400,000 a year. I know Wheeler High School has their complex up in the Seekonk Rehoboth area, and I know that they're making well over $100,000 per league on rentals, and that includes with the lights and all the other facilities. It's just an amazing complex, and there's such a need. And we spent a lot of time on this. Councilman Lattice is going to say that we're going to go past midnight, but it is a huge, huge need for all of us and the community. Thank you. Councilwoman Travis.
The city. And one of the concerns I have, and I already met with Matt and Jim, and I hope the administration can join in, is to put a little pressure on the Army Corps of Engineers to clear that last jetty, because I was told by an old fisherman 20 years ago that if that was not done, we were going to get sand on that new boat ramp that we put in when we put it in. Now, I have to call Parks and Rec all the time to shovel the sand off there. And Army Corps engineers told us they were going to dredge that every 5 years. They've never came back. And that's a major thing. That's an area. That was the first handicap boat ramp in the state. And it's used all the time. It was a benefit for people, even in our community, where they used to have to pay to launch their boat. Even Quahoggers had to do that. This is open to the public, like you wanted the beach to be free. This is an area that's very important, and unless we address that, we got to keep sending them down to shovel that sand off. And the only question, I know you're going to respond, but the only question I have is salaries for seasonal. It looked like it went down. Is that the area that's going to help clean the beaches? Is that the salary line item? Because it went down. It says salaries, seasonal, and it looks like it was marketed for $330,000. Now it's $275,000.
As a matter of fact, Councilwoman, we are having the lottery. The summer lottery is coming up, and I think it's going to be held right here. So you're welcome to come when we pull the numbers out of the bucket. And relative to the boat ramp, don't tell my wife, but I was there last week very early in the morning on a big piece of equipment, and we were scooping that sand out. And I'm very well aware of it, and I'll tell you, you know, a lot of people say, well, you're a micromanager. No, I like to work side by side with the men and women that work for this city. I like to show them that I appreciate the work they do. I want to learn what they do. We shoveled that sand out, and it was pure, clean sand. And that sand was redeposited on a beach to replenish the sand that was eroded. Not there, because we know it would get washed right back in. But there were three or four people ready to launch their boat as we were leaving. And they came up to me, and they said, thank you, Mayor. Okay? They appreciated it. These weren't people that were going out water skiing. These were people that were launching their Quahog's gifts, making a living. You know, this was their livelihood. I did not witness, I know it's handicapped. It's made to be used as a handicap also when launching. But I didn't witness that morning. But I did witness the gratitude and how much people utilize and love that ramp. And I was proud to be part of it with the crew that went down there. Pretty soon I'll get my CDL or my equipment operator's license. And maybe Matt will let me drive one of those things.
Thank you. Any other comments from council members? Any comments from members of the public? Just identify yourself for the record.
John Simino, Ward 6. I'll keep it quick. On page 46, which we were just on, Department of Parks and Recreation, it might be a typo, but there's a, it says 45238, supplies, dog pound.
That's supposed to be supplies recreation program. It is a typo. I wouldn't know how to run a dog pound.
Okay, because there's another section that already has dog pound. So I was wondering, I figured it must have been a typo. So thank you.
If I could finish that on that point. We have right now within the animal shelter, we have an account labeled 28238, which is supplies animal dog pound. That carried over. It's since been corrected. It will be corrected moving forward.
I just saw it and I was questioned. I figured that was the answer. The last two times I came up here, I failed to mention one thing. Thank you for the early Christmas gift on the vehicles. Thank you very much, publicly. Okay. Now, my last statement. Going back to salaries and et cetera, you said that this contract has not been signed yet for DPW because they would not do the procedure you wanted to do for the original and all of that. I got that piece of it. So I'm hoping that since something's been brought up in regards to salaries, maybe since they want to be a little difficult in approving the contract the way they should, maybe we can limit the 2.7% raises to those that do not get step increases so that those people don't get 9% in the year when they first get their raise. They won't get a 10% raise and people won't see that and get upset. So, or like I said to the Aberdeen administration, let's get a lump sum. This is how much I can give this department as a raise. And everybody gets a lump sum, $50, $100. When you start doing this 2.7, the people at the bottom that do most of the work get 2.7 of 30,000. I'm not sure under you, but under Mayor Aberdeen and his chief of staff, they then passed on the same pay increases to the department directors who helped negotiate the contracts, which was their own raise.
Sure.
So I'm hoping that we do it lump sum wise because you didn't do it for the police and you didn't do it for the DPW.
John, I don't want to interrupt you. I'll gladly have this conversation with you, but right now we're discussing the budget and I want to get to this budget. It's going to be a long night, but please, I'll have a cup of coffee with you and we can discuss that.
I'll buy.
Okay.
Because I know you're tight. So
I'm tight for money now, believe me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay. We're going to have any other questions from the public on Parks and Recreation? If not, we'll move on to McDermott Pool. What page is that, Brian?
McDermott Pool is actually part of the Department of Parks and Recreation now, so it's going to be zero. The original Parks and Recreation Division, those are all zero, and they have been lump-summed and included in what we just went over, the Department of Parks and Recreation.
Thank you. Any questions? So, Ryan, you're saying that the pool and the ice skating rink are together, zero increase, basically maintenance as usual. Do we have any questions from any members of the council on the pool and the ice rinks on that budget? Any questions from members of the public on the pool and the ice rinks? If not, we'll move on to fire.
Fire can be found on page 34 of the general fund budget and beginning on page 22 of the personnel supplement.
Mr. President, for those of the general public that don't know, Peter McMichael is our new chief. Our new assistant chief is Jason, he's done an exemplary job for us over the years. And we've got a good crew at the top, and they are as new to this, their new positions as... They're more recent than I am. I've been here a year. I think the chief has been here, what, 3 months, 2 months? 3 months. So I'd like to welcome him to the department. We have weekly meetings, updates. I'm in constant communication with these professionals, and I welcome him this evening to answer any questions that you have relative to the fire rescue budgets.
Okay. Did you, Chief, you want to give us a brief explanation of your budget? And welcome to the council chamber for the first time in a budget hearing.
Thank you, Mr. President. The fire department budget request for this year is $23,852,211. This represents a $1,207,371 or 5.3% increase over fiscal year 19 budget, which was $22,644,840. This budget does not include any non-contractual pay or benefit increases for the uniformed or non-uniformed employees. Currently, we have 23 vacancies in the department, which include one assistant chief, one deputy chief of training, five rescue driver positions, and 16 floater positions. The department currently has 189 uniformed personnel, of which 10 are members of the department administration. Our minimum manning per the CPA, per the CBA is 184 uniformed firefighters. There are 46 of these firefighters assigned to each of the four platoons. A fully staffed administration is 12 personnel. The department started fiscal year 19 at 195 personnel of the 212 budgeted, and started fiscal year 18 at 221 personnel of the 220 budgeted for that fiscal year. Looking at the past two-year analysis of call volume, we've experienced a 7.7 increase in emergency runs since 2016.
Councilman McAllister.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Chief.
Good evening.
My first question is on line item 35417, hydrant rental. These are hydrants that we rent from Kent County Water, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. That's a fixed obligation that we
It's a fixed obligation, and I see that it continues to keep going up every year. Are they doing additional maintenance on these rentals? Are their expenses increasing, or are they just passing this along to us each year? Are we seeing increased, you know, like I said, are they newer hydrants now? Are they special hydrants? It continues to go up, and it's a pretty significant. I mean, it's, you know, almost 5% this year. It's you know, $353,000 line item, and we have to pay it. I understand that, but it continues to go up. Is there anything? Do we get anything from Kent County to show the maintenance that they're doing on it, or anything like that?
No, we do currently do not get any report or documentation from them. This fee does keep going up, and in speaking to my counterpart in West Warwick, they're over $500,000 in this fee to Kent County Water. So the pain is felt throughout other communities as well. It's an obligation that it kills me to pay, because I could do a lot more with that money. But it seems that we have no choice in this matter.
Yeah, I think that this line item is another light item that highlights of things that increasing our city's budget that we have no control over. Like you said, we're not just seeing any increase in services from these rental hydrants. We're not renting additional ones, but the increases keep going up. So just wanted to ask you about that. Also wanted to talk to you tonight about the line item 35261, clothing allowance. Is that a contractual line item?
Yes, sir, that is.
Okay, and that went down, correct, 5.25?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, sir?
And that line item, it went down about 5.25?
Yes, that's right.
On that, okay, that is contractual. And the other light item 35335, medical examinations. Can you speak to that light item for me, please?
I'm sorry? Yes. Yep. Yes. So this line item is for our firefighter occupational medical surveillance program. So back a few months ago, we received a letter from Rhode Island Emergency Management calling into question our ability to have a hazmat team receive state funding for the hazmat team because we had not completed our occupational medical surveillance exams. I believe previously these were referred to as physical exams, and they're a lot more than a typical physical exam. They are required under NFPA 1500, which is the national standard for health and safety for firefighters, which is adopted under Rhode Island law, as well as OSHA regulation 29 CFR 1910. So we have to participate in these medical surveillance programs in order to have a hazmat team, send our members into these hazardous material situations, properly train them, properly equip them, and also in order to receive funding for these programs. So most of our training and equipment is funded throughout by the state through REMA. They can withhold this funding, and much of the equipment that we currently have in our firehouses throughout the city was purchased by them. They had discuss the possibility of having to retrieve that equipment if we did not maintain a medical surveillance program.
So these are required state requirements because of the specialized work that these firefighters are doing and the equipment that they're using, that this is part of their daily duties, being on these hazmat units and stuff like that. So this is a requirement, and it's because of the particular duties that these firefighters have to do that is specialist to their job. That is why they have this.
That's right. And because of the hazardous materials that they are exposed to throughout the course of their duties, these programs include testing to monitor them for any types of exposure to heavy metals such as arsenic, mercury, and lead. There is a host of testing and monitoring that is done in these exams that is not done in a normal physical exam, and that would not be covered by Blue Cross Blue Shield because it is it's an occupational exam. Similar to if you needed a CDL exam for a CDL license for your job, Blue Cross would not cover that. You'd be required to pay out of pocket for that. This is along the same lines of that, in that there's lots of testing, even for vaccines, for hepatitis, chest x-rays, blood tests for lead and other metals, audiograms, a pulmonary function test, PPD, which is purified protein derivative, which is a skin test to test for tuberculosis infection. So these are some of the items that are required in this exam, that would not be covered under a normal physical exam. And by not having a medical surveillance program, an occupational medical surveillance program in place, we risk the loss of hundreds of thousands of dollars in equipment and funding for this program. And it would greatly inhibit our ability to respond to these types of emergencies. And being the city of Warwick with the airport and numerous interstates going through our city, we have a very high percentage of these types of responses.
Yeah, so it's not only, I mean, obviously the cost that we could lose on that end, but also it's a health issue. It's tracking. You said they could be exposed to something. They go and get tested, but then if they go back again in a year, we have a baseline to see and stuff like that. That's part of the requirements for this because, again, of the specialty of this assignment being on the hazmat unit, correct?
That's right. And this testing would begin at the very beginning when that member would first join the department, so that if that member had some type of disease or sickness, it would be detected early on, and the city may not be liable for that if it was not caused by an on-the-job type of exposure.
Okay. So, thank you. And then my last question is on grants. I know that you have professional development. I know that you guys are doing great work. You got a grant approved, a fire truck, $800,000 fire truck. The city paid $85,000 on that. That is outstanding. You know, I hope you can bring in some more. I know this is a priority for the administration and the fire department.
Yes, if I may, Mr. President, through the chair, Councilman McAllister, not only did we acquire a couple of pieces of apparatus that are currently being under construction, one a rescue and one, as you know, the major heavy duty apparatus, because this council was the one that voted to approve those purchases. But if you remember, the approach that the administration and the council took back then was it was going to take a year, up to a year, 6 months to a year to have this apparatus constructed. And we said, we want something to use until this is completed. We had two separate vendors. One vendor was supposed to send us a rescue to be completed until they completed the new rescue that's currently under construction, which I think at this point is probably another 2 or 3 months that they're going to be completed. 2 or 3 weeks. Okay, even better. But the other sent us an engine, a pumper, I think it was. So for the last several months, we've utilized the yellow pumper. Everyone says, why are we using Cranston's apparatus? No, it's not Cranston's apparatus. That is a truck that the manufacturer lets us use until that purchase was completed. So this is thinking outside the box, both by this department, this administration, and this council. Because as you are aware, and this is something we've discussed, Council President, myself and my colleagues on the council, when we go out for apparatus, so that we don't have a situation we did under the Pierce years. I call it the Pierce years. The Pierce years, because we bought what was supposedly touted as the best piece of apparatus. It was a little more expensive. But guess what? Those two pieces of apparatus, the most recent purchases, are the ones that are always out and broken because of the technological advancements that they have. So now, as we go forward, what we attach to the bids are that if this new piece of equipment fails the taxpayers and the department and its service apparatus, it's got to be sent back for repair, that they have to send us a loaner vehicle so that we're not driving Cranston, North Providence, Johnston, West Warwick's vehicles. Because there's something that the taxpayers aren't aware of. Those vehicles that we're driving from other cities and towns, that's not the second team, that's the third team. Okay? They're on their last leg. And if we're utilizing them and they break down, guess who has to repair them and at whose cost? We do. So this is another plug that this administration, this fire department, and this council addressed that benefits the taxpayers. Now, again, I don't issue press releases to this effect, neither do any of you, but I think that this is the proper forum to get that message out, and I'm taking that opportunity to do so. Thanks.
Thank you.
Councilman Lattiser.
Chief, I'm going to continue on some questions on the medical exams that Councilman McAllister was speaking to. Those medical exams, is this something that is going to be a requirement of the fire department that these firefighters must take those exams, or is it something that the firefighters do voluntarily?
Councilman, these requirements are mandated for hazmat purposes. I got contacted from the hazmat office that if we did not comply with that requirement for our hazmat team, that we could not answer a hazmat call had we been called to a situation, whether it be at the airport or some manufacturing plant somewhere. So as to not have to call Cranston or West Warwick to respond to Warwick or our international airport, God forbid, we immediately engaged our hazmat team to take these courses, the chief, myself, and Jason, the assistant chief, so that we would not be put in that predicament. Before we did that, before we took that action, I wanted to be certain, because not too long ago I sat here with each and every one of you when we were dealing with the healthcare contracts and things of that nature. I inferred what was said differently than I learned recently, and that was that these things would be covered under their healthcare contracts that's provided as an employee. They're not. These are totally different tests that require different testing, and that's a requirement for, not an in-house requirement for the Warwick Fire Department or the Cranston Fire Department. This is the hazmat agency that accredits those teams to enter into those situations. It's not a arbitrary or an elective thing, it's a mandatory thing. And that's why we've complied, thanks to the information I was able to derive from the chief and the assistant chief, and I got educated, and I also confirmed that with the healthcare consultant. So I was of the belief it could have been part of the Blue Cross, and it wasn't, but now we know. So we go forward.
So the answer is that all members of the hazmat team are required to take this exam. It's not voluntary by any of them, it is mandated. And how many members of the hazmat team do we have?
Right now we have approximately 38 members.
38 members? And how much is each of those exams?
$325
What I'd like to point out is that these exams are not limited to only members of the HAZMAT team. Through NFPA 1500, the National Standard for Health and Safety, which was adopted by Rhode Island General Law, we're required to perform the occupational medical surveillance program for all of our firefighters. So that's why the cost of the figure is what it is. This is a NFPA standard as well as a OSHA regulation. I should also note that when researching this, we looked at the city of Cranston, which is a smaller department than we are, yet they had budgeted $85,000 for this program. So a significant larger cost than we are able to deliver this program for.
So in the HAZMAT team, we have 38 members. Those are the only people that are mandated, required to take this test at $325 per exam.
So the test is broken up into categories of HAZMAT technician or firefighter. And then there are also candidate. So if we hired a new hire, there's another testing bracket for that. So the testing would be required by all members of our department.
Required by the department or required by?
Regulations.
By regulations. What regulations?
So it's by NFPA 1500, which is Chapter 2328.4 of Rhode Island General Laws and Safety and Health Programs for Fire Departments. That references NFPA 1500, which specifies a medical surveillance program.
And right now you have 189 active personnel, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I should note that this program, this does not apply to volunteer fire departments. It's to paid departments. I believe they would take into account the cost of the program, and that would be too much for a rural area to handle.
So if every single member of the fire department took this exam, it would be $61,425 if every single member took the exam. Do you intend to have every single member of the fire department take this exam?
Yes, sir.
You do?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And how often is this exam required by NFPA?
It's an annual exam.
It's an annual exam. So if every member of the department takes this exam, you're actually going to be, oh no, I'm sorry, you're not, because you budgeted $70,000. Okay. Chief, for years, overtime has been an issue with the fire department. And this goes back to, goes way back before I ever even got on the council. And I can remember particular years when, at the time, it was Councilman Solomon discussing the overtime with different chiefs from back in the day. And since I've been on the council, this proposed overtime of 35,111 is the highest that I've ever seen. And I can remember many, many hours over the years of conversation regarding the overtime versus staffing, lack of staffing, floaters, etc. So can you give us the rationale for your requested the department's requested budget of using a round number of $4 million of overtime, which is beyond a number that I've ever seen. So what's the rationale? I understand that you have a full complement of 212, I believe it is, firefighters. 212 is a full complement?
At this time, no, sir.
No, no, what your complement is. It's 212, that's considered a full complement?
Our full complement would be... So 220 has been the full complement. That's including six floaters per each shift. That's 220. 212 is
less the eight floaters.
Is what we currently budgeted.
Right. And I remember the eight floaters because when that was taking place, that conversation was taking place, I was on the council then, and the eight floaters were supposed to have a significant impact on reducing the overtime. And that didn't occur. But yet the expenses and the salaries, et cetera, did occur. So for the sake of conversation, I'm going to minus out the floaters because I think that is, it's additional staff that isn't necessarily required. So we're at 212. You are, today, you're currently at 189. So I need to see how this math formula works when your overtime budget is increasing. It could be as much as $3.8 million or $3+ million since I've been here, with approximately 23 less members in the department. How does the math work out where the taxpayers are going to see a savings of a $4 million overtime staying with a complement of 189 members in the department?
Okay, so this all comes down to whether or not you want to pay salaries and benefits or you want to pay overtime. Every municipality has a different stance on that, on what they want to do. So if we stay at about a 220 member complement with six floaters on every shift, that barely covers the vacations that are owed to the minimum manning. So we have a minimum man of 184 guys. Anytime we fall below that, we need to hire. So the more floaters we put on, the more shifts we can cover without overtime. Right now we're at 189 personnel. We actually have five vacant positions. So not only do we have no floaters, but we have five vacant positions sitting on our books right now. If you want to take a look at how that translates to overtime, those vacant positions will cost us about $648,000 in overtime in the next fiscal year. The vacations that are allotted to our current personnel for minimum manning will come to about $2.1 million in overtime because we have no floaters to fill in when they're on vacation. Sick time, about $911,000 for the average amount of sick time that our firefighters use during the fiscal year. And then to cover on-the-job injuries on people that are absent for on-the-job injuries, about $281,000. And that's how we arrived at that close to $4 million number that you're looking at on overtime. The only solution to that is to add more firefighters, which would add more in salaries and benefits, and that would reduce the overtime. Where that clear number is as whether or not it's better to hire new or to pay overtime, every municipal leader has a different theory on that as to where that break even is, and that's something for probably the personnel department to really work on.
As I also have my own theory on that, Chief, I employ people, and I understand about overtime, and I understand about new hires with full benefits and the advantages of paying overtime as opposed to paying all the benefits that go along with a new employee. I'm fully aware of that. I also know that there is a break-even point where you end up with a diminishing return. and it no longer makes sense to pay for overtime as opposed to adding on additional employees. And that's what I'm asking for, is if you have that formula for that mathematical problem that says $4 million in overtime is a better deal, so to speak, than hiring another 10 or 20 firefighters with a full complement.
May I address that?
Yes.
In a perfect world, maybe. As you know, this is my first budget. As you know, over time in the last several years, even before you became on the council, was never depicted accurately. Never with a capital N. I did my best this year to give you the true picture of what we have so that we don't have to deal with the unexpected. This is the factual. I am not entertaining the hiring of anyone at this point in time for the fire department, simply because this year alone, the adverse tier two adjustment ruling cost us $600,000. Until that issue is decided, how much do you think that's going to cost us with more hirees, with more legacy benefits? Until we settle that issue, we're going to make do with what we have, because those are the only resources we have. But I won't lie to you and cut that in half, and then next year, a year from now, you say, Joe, what happened? I'm going to tell you what happened. At 212 firefighters, total salary, holiday, CBA required overtime, clothing allowance, health care, pensions, comes to about $24,533,567. At 190 firefighters, that same figure arrived at is $24,463,126. Yes, that's a high figure. There's less firefighters, but it still costs us less than the 212. And to add fuel to the fire, pardon the pun, it doesn't touch upon legacy costs, which are associated with each additional position. So it behooves me, it behooves the taxpayers, and it behooves all the council people here that we have the accurate facts on the table as we move forward. Is it something I want to see? Is it something I want to see corrected? Sure. I think it would be more advantageous to not just the city, its taxpayers, and the fire department. But until those issues are resolved, I'm not willing to pour fuel on the fire. And I will deal with an accurate number and approach that accurate number without reaching to the stars and adding new employees or adding new floaters that aren't going to address the main issue. And the main issue is that tier two pension reform from years ago that we thought everyone was in agreement with, but an arbitrator indicated otherwise. Until that issue is resolved, it's just like spending good money after bad. It's not a wise decision. But the number you see before you, that $3.9 million, that's accurate. But I'd rather pay that than what can escalate into even further expenditures, much further expenditures.
Mayor, I didn't hear at how many firefighters it was $24 million? It was at 212
firefighters, $24,533,567. 190 firefighters, $24 million, 463,126. That's salary, holiday, CBA required OT, clothing allowance, health care, pensions, but it doesn't include legacy cost. For those of you who don't know what legacy costs are, it's the post and the matching funds for those posts.
Thank you, Councilman Lattisa.
So, Mayor, is it fair to assume that if this budget were to be approved with a $4 million overtime, that the personnel at 189 firefighters right now will not be increasing?
I didn't catch the tail end of what you said. Is it fair to assume?
Is it fair to assume that if the council were to approve the $4 million in overtime, that the complement of firefighters would not be increasing during the course of that year? It's at 189 now.
How could the complement increase if that tier two issue, that very expensive tier two issue, is not addressed?
So the answer is no.
Okay. Pick a number for the lottery tomorrow. I can only deal with the tools I have in front of me right now. And right now, if that's a pretty accurate number, assuming there's no hirees. If things change and it's not spent, I'd like to come back here and say, hey, everyone came to the table, we agreed on this, this, and this. Because you know something? One thing I realize when I make a promise, or when I reach an agreement with somebody, I don't do that unilaterally. I authored that ratification contract back in 2006. I know that I have to bring that to this legislative body with the facts proving why it's good or it's not good. We have to vet that. Just like when you come to an agreement with the leaders, they've got to bring that to their rank and file. We can't have a meeting of the minds between just myself and them. I found out. They have to, the rank and file have to agree to that. I can't promise them that I can do something unilaterally. No. It requires ratification by this body. So it's going to be good for everybody. Most importantly, the taxpayers, to make this work. It's got to be affordable. It's got to be fair for a great job that we've got one of the best fire departments in the state. They do a great job, by far. And relative to equipment, that new ladder truck we bought is better than most equipment on most of the local departments, condition-wise. So we keep them well-equipped. They've got nice apparatus. You're going to have some people that are going to be negative, you know, and complain, but that goes in any industry, whether it be public sector, private sector, whatever company or corporation you may work for. You're going to have those people. You're not going to ever please those people, or they're going to listen to the wrong people. But the thing is, what you have before you today with this chief, this assistant chief, and this mayor is pretty damn accurate. And there's no attempt here to camouflage or disguise that. We believe in transparency. We want everyone to see what's going on, because it's not going to benefit anyone to hide something. That's not the best way to address something that needs addressing.
Also, a question on line 35104, salaries, fire one. That has taken a dramatic decrease. And what is the reason for that? That has a year-end forecast of $2.4 million, and you're projecting for the new budget $5.25 million.
Councilman, there are, in the fire one, there are only five people left in that that system. So that number will continue to decrease. due to retirements.
Only five firefighters in that? Okay.
Yes, sir.
And diesel fuel, 35,221, for at least from 2017, you had no diesel fuel usage. This year, you're proposing 155,000. How is it? How did it go from nothing to 155,000?
Yeah. Yes, Councilman, if I may answer that. In the past, that was all lumped into one account. What we did for, again, under this administration and transparency, is to break the diesel from the gasoline. So that's why there was nothing in prior years. But you'll see it this year and in future years, the breakdown between diesel and gasoline.
Which explains why your gasoline line went down so much as well. I catch on.
You're a winner.
I catch on.
That's correct.
So